Hi everyone, this is Christy Crespin. Welcome to the first official meeting of the California Diabetics in Action, the newest affiliate of the California Council of the Blind. We were affiliated on April 14th, 2022, upon unanimous vote of the CCB board. So yay us. Hopefully there will be more people joining the chapter affiliate, as well as more people joining our meeting this evening. I know if you guys are like I am, scrambling around, going, oh my God, it's time. So, let me get to where I need to get here, which I thought I was, but I wasn't. Okay. I was waiting for Nancy.
I'm here.
I know. No, I'm just teasing. You were, you came in at my lull of getting places. All right. So, again, welcome everybody. Our program this evening is going to be Doorsteps to Diabetes. And on behalf of the committees and the board of California Diabetics in Action, as I said, CCB's newest affiliate as of April 14th, I want to welcome you all. This meeting is being recorded, so we will hold our program during the first hour of our business. We will hold the first hour. We'll hold the program the first hour and our business meeting the second hour. For those who stick it out with us, we will be having a drawing twice somewhere in this meeting. People need to be present. If your name is drawn, you will get a free membership, or if you've already sent in your membership dues of $25, you will receive a check or a gift card for $25. So one of these will happen near the end of the meeting, and one of these will happen somewhere. We currently have 15 members. We hope more people would join. And some people said they would, and we still haven't received their checks or their money orders. So make sure to contact John Ross, our treasurer, at jross1973@gmail.com. On May 15th at 3 o'clock p.m., we will draw a close to our membership drive, but not to our membership. and we will have another two names of members who have joined who will receive $25 gift certificates. And this will happen at, again, 3 p.m. on May 15th. So without further ado, we'll begin our program, Doorsteps to Diabetes. Hosting guidelines, we are asking that you all stay on mute until the time at the end of the program when we have question and answers. We will be presenting the program. I So the questions at the conclusion. So if you have a question, jot it down so that you don't forget it. Again, this meeting is being recorded. So you need to press the got it button. And again, at the end, we will give you instructions for raising hands, muting and unmuting. Diabetes is a condition diagnosed in more than 30 million people in the United States. About 17% of the U.S. population. Research indicates that 25 to 30% of people diagnosed with diabetes are at risk of developing sight loss. About 4.7 million people in the U.S. have diabetic retinopathy, defined as any diseased condition of the retina, especially one that is non-inflammatory. In the U.S., there are about 1 million people living with legal blindness, 10% or less vision. Every year, between 12 and 24,000 people become legally blind due to diabetic retinopathy. I'd like to introduce to you the co-chairs of our Education and Program Committee, Nellie Emerson and Nicolette Noyes.
Welcome, everybody. So glad to have the opportunity to bring this program and this information to you. I need to let you know that our program participants are not medical providers, and we ask that any information that you hear that you think is an action that you would like to take, if it pertains to treatment, we ask that you please discuss it with your medical practitioner. We are not medically trained. And with that, we will continue.
Hi, welcome. My name is Nicolette Noyes, and I'd like to, excuse me, give you the names of our panelists: Christy Creston, Nellie Emerson, Nicolette Noyes, Olivia Ostergaard, Maureen Feveny, Nancy Unger, and Vivian Younger. Thank you.
All right, Nellie, the introduction.
Okay, well, I will begin by talking about what is diabetes. So diabetes is a serious disease. Diabetes mellitus happens when an individual develops high blood sugar that continues to be high and is not easily controlled. Diabetes is caused by either a lack of insulin, where the body simply does not produce insulin, or the body's inability to use the insulin that it has. Usually, insulin is a hormone that controls blood sugar. The job that insulin has is to move blood sugar from the blood into the cells for energy that can be used as the body needs it. When a body has insufficient or no insulin, the result is elevated blood sugar. So, when blood sugar is elevated over long periods of time and is not controlled, it can lead to organ and nerve damage, eye conditions, loss of vision, kidney and other organ damage. There are different types of diabetes, which will be discussed as we progress in our program. Christy?
Okay. So thank you very much, Nellie. And so I would like to talk with you about prediabetes. So prediabetes is where the blood sugars are not quite high enough to be diagnosed with type 2. Prediabetes can be diagnosed in children and adults. If a person has blood sugar levels of their A1C under 6.5, they are generally given the diagnosis of prediabetes, or the older diagnosis is borderline diabetes. And so some people even still use the term sugar diabetes, but it's not called that anymore. So prediabetes is the most prominent prevalent term. If a person is doing finger sticks or urine tests for blood sugar levels, the levels are going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 109 to 125. If you're diagnosed with 126 or above, that's pretty much getting the diagnosis of type 2 diabetes. When a person has prediabetes, the person may have no symptoms at all that the person feels, or the doctor may be saying things like, it's time to start working on losing weight. A person is obese if they are 20% above their weight range. And by losing even 5 to 10 pounds can make a big difference. A person may be getting told, we need to put you on statins, or you may have high blood pressure, or we want to put you on metformin so we can keep you from having higher blood sugars so that you don't become diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. So those are some of the some of what happens with prediabetes. So to talk about type 1, I'd like to bring on Lorene Theveny.
Hello, everyone. This is Lorene Theveny, and I will talk about type 1 diabetes, also known as juvenile diabetes. There are different causes and symptoms of type 1 diabetes. For instance, there are genetic factors and some viruses that are thought to contribute to type 1 diabetes. And most often, type 1 diabetes usually appears during childhood or adolescence, but can also develop in adults. And the exact causes of type 1 diabetes are still under research and investigation. So type 1 diabetes, often also known as juvenile diabetes, has various symptoms. They can appear relatively suddenly. So some of the symptoms are increased thirst, frequent urination. There's a notice of bedwetting in children who have never been bedwetters before. There's extreme hunger, unintended weight loss, irritability and mood changes, fatigue and weakness. Also, in people with type 1 diabetes, which is known as a chronic disease, the cells in the pancreas that make insulin are destroyed, so the body is unable to make insulin. Insulin is a hormone that helps the body cells use glucose, which is a sugar. And glucose is sugar in the blood is made from the food that we eat. So these are components of energy that are used for your body between meals, during exercise, and while you sleep. So when your cells have had enough blood sugar, the excess is stored in your liver and muscle tissues in the form of glucogen. It's broken down into blood sugar with type 1 diabetes when your body is unable to process the glucose due to the lack of insulin or glucose from your food. It cannot make its way into your cells, and that leaves too much glucose circulating in your blood. So high blood sugars can lead to both short-term and long-term problems. So please contact your doctor or healthcare practitioner, or if you or those around you or you have in contact have any of these symptoms. Thank you. Now I will give it to the next person for type 2.
Okay, type 2 diabetes is Livy Ostergaard.
Hi, thank you, Christy. Type 2 diabetes is a condition that usually is as called onset adult diabetes. It usually will set in with adults possibly 40 to 45 and older. Although, in my case, in my mother's case, she developed it in an older area of life in her 60s and before she died at 70. Type 2 diabetes is when the insulin in your pancreas does not work that well, and so you need insulin to control your glucose and blood sugars in your body with the foods that you eat. And usually these can spike usually after you eat and in the evenings. Type 2 diabetes has many factors, such as been mentioned before, but I'll repeat them. Genetics. In my case, I had diabetes on both sides of my parents' family, my mother's side and my father's side. I lost an aunt who had heart surgery, and they ended up, she had diabetes and went into kidney failure. I had an uncle on my mother's side that lost a limb through diabetes. And my brother now has it, and he's 2 years younger than I am. So sometimes it runs through the family, and other times it will skip generations. Other factors include obesity, your lifestyle, diet and exercise, and some of the symptoms we will be discussing later.
And later is right now. Livy, okay. We'll be discussing the most common symptoms.
The most common symptoms of type 2 diabetes are extreme thirst. You want to drink water and you can't seem to quench your thirst. extreme urination. You're going to the bathroom many, many times a day. You can be irritable, moody, or I would consider grouchy. And you can be depressed. You could also have neuropathy, where you might have tingling in your hands or in your feet or other parts of your body. And you're very tired. These are some common symptoms of diabetes. Next person.
Thank you. And Nikki will talk about the causes.
Causes of diabetes. Each type of, thank you, Christy.
You're welcome.
Each type of diabetes has unique causes, symptoms, and treatments. Diabetes mellitus, commonly known as diabetes, is a metabolic disease that causes high blood sugar. The hormone insulin moves sugar from the blood into our cells to be stored or used for energy. With diabetes, our bodies either don't make enough insulin or can't effectively use the insulin it does make. Untreated high blood sugar from diabetes can damage our nerves, eyes, kidneys, and other organs. Each type of diabetes has unique symptoms, causes, and treatments. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease. The immune system mistakenly attacks and destroys insulin-producing beta cells in the pancreas where insulin is made. About 10% of people with diabetes have this type. It's unclear what causes this attack. Genes may play a role in some people. It's also possible that a virus sets off the immune system attack. Type 2 diabetes stems from a combination of genetics and lifestyle factors. Being overweight or obese increases our risk too. Carrying extra weight, especially in our bellies, makes our cells more resistant to the effects of insulin on our blood sugar. It runs in families, as family members share genes that make us more likely to get type 2 diabetes and to be overweight. It occurs when our bodies become resistant to insulin and sugar builds up in our blood. Prediabetes occurs when our blood sugar is higher than normal, but it's not high enough for a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes. According to the Mayo Clinic, the exact cause of prediabetes is unknown, but family history and genetics appear to play an important role. What is clear is that people with prediabetes don't process sugar, glucose, properly anymore. Gestational diabetes is high blood sugar during pregnancy caused by insulin-blocking hormones produced by the placenta that make a pregnant woman's cells less sensitive to the effects of insulin. Women who are overweight when we get pregnant or gain too much weight during our pregnancies are more likely to get gestational diabetes. The bottom line is that both genes and environmental factors play a role in triggering diabetes. A rare condition called diabetes insipidus is not related to diabetes mellitus, although it has a similar name. It is a different condition in which our kidneys remove too much fluid from our bodies. Thank you.
Thank you. And Nellie will discuss the complications, some complications.
Yes, there's a wide range of complications of both main kinds of diabetes. What frequently occurs is that a person can have organ and tissue damage. Heart disease, heart attacks, and stroke may occur. Neuropathy of your limbs and other parts of your body can take place. Nephropathy occurs. Retinopathy and vision loss are very common complications of diabetes. Hearing loss can take place. And in addition to hearing loss, there can also be foot damage with ulcers and lesions on your feet that do not heal. Skin infections caused by bacteria and fungal infections as well can occur. Depression is frequently present, as well as dementia. There has been some mention of gestational diabetes in women who are pregnant, and this frequently happens when the woman is overweight when she becomes pregnant, and also if she gains too much weight during pregnancy. So there are many risks both to the mother and the baby when gestational diabetes occurs. These are some of the ones that can happen with the baby. And one of them is premature birth. Also, higher than usual, higher than normal birth weight. Increased risk of type 2 diabetes in adulthood. Low blood pressure. Jaundice. Stillbirth. And these are some of the risks for the mother. High blood pressure. Preeclampsia, which may lead to the necessity of having a cesarean section. Risk of having continued type 2 diabetes after her pregnancy is completed. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Nellie. And our next topic will be the care team and treatment options. And this will be presented by Vivian, followed by Nancy.
Thank you, Christy. So the first thing that I wanted to say is that your physician and you are an equal partner in the decision-making process of your medical care. The doctor knows what to do, but you are the one that will be the one to inform the doctor about what's happening in your body. I want to encourage you not to feel like you're being intimidated when you ask the doctor questions, because it's your body. So your first line of defense is your primary care physician, because that's where most of the time we have the first contact for undiagnosed health conditions. And so he'll send out you to refer you to different doctors, do blood tests, order urine analysis. And as previously mentioned, based on the results of your blood and urine analysis, that will determine what course to take in terms of pre-diabetes and the diagnosis of diabetes. He will refer you to an endocrinologist. The endocrinologist is basically your primary care doctor for diabetes. And he is qualified in the field of glands and hormones. Depending on what your symptoms are and how far along you are in the disease process, he may refer you to variety of doctors, and nephrologist, who is the kidney doctor. If your kidneys are not functioning properly and you need extra care under the function and maintenance, that's where you go. You might be having problems with your feet. Now, as far as being visually impaired, diabetic, and having foot problems, it's crucial that if you are going to do something, even as simple as getting your nails trimmed, that a podiatrist most likely should be the one to do that. Because with diabetes, one of the symptoms is that you take longer to heal when you have diabetes. Also, we may not see the redness or the beginning of a sore that may be on your foot. And if untreated, then that can, and you end up seeing someone, a wound specialist. A lot of times when you hear that someone loses a leg or a foot, part of it has to do with the body is doing its own thing. And that's why it's really important. So if you feel like your leg is warm, don't take it for granted if you've been diagnosed as pre-diabetic. That's one of our ways for us to figure out that maybe we should go see the doctor. Then you have a dietitian. The dietitian is the one that's going to help you develop a healthy eating plan to help control high blood pressure, sugar, also weight management, stress management, heart disease, and so forth. Now, there's a nurse educator. Why is that person's important? It's because that person's going to be teaching your nurses the latest in terms of what's happening in terms of the field of diabetes. Eye care. The ophthalmologist is the doctor who is there for the health of our eyes. He can also look in there and he can also determine whether you have diabetes. There are other conditions too stop Jaws from doing this here because it's going to drive me crazy. Oh, no, hold on. Stop it. Sorry. Okay. Hopefully that went away. Where was I? So a lot of times we have other side products in terms of diabetic retinopathy convocations. So sometimes we might get cataract, glaucoma, and flashing lights and all types of things. But the most important thing is that if you see a difference, I don't care if you thought you saw a fly and you weren't sure if that's what you saw, get in to see the doctor right away. That could be a multiplication of blood vessels that are there, which may require a vitrectomy, which is taken care of through either laser or surgery. So that's very important. That's how we can permanently lose our vision if we don't take care of that. So someone already mentioned about the tingling in your feet and in your hands. And if that's the case, then a neurologist is the one that can monitor that. But what I want to say here is that, as you can see, diabetes is so complex that sometimes we can be misdiagnosed. So let's say, for example, that you're having some vision problems, you're having some balance problems, you have some back problems, and you have some foot problems. So all of those diagnoses can be, has to be determined by the specific specialists. But one of the most important things I want to say is that we're in the world of specialists. So I want to encourage you to become your own specialist and your own advocate. And remember, I started by saying, don't be afraid to ask questions. Do research about any body part that's affected. That's very important. Exercise is important. I'll be discussing that later. And I think that pretty much, there's one more thing, mental health. You know, someone being told they have diabetes is equivalent to someone being told they have cancer. Very, very, very stressful diagnosis. And people can become overwhelmed by just that diagnosis and decide, oh, I'm not going to do anything about it. I just can't handle it. The longer we do not take care of ourselves as diabetics, then you may get into a situation where you have irreversible damage that could have been controlled before. Now, the mental health, lots and lots of choices in the field of mental health. You know, psychology, a psychologist and a psychiatrist, a counselor. There's so many options that we have today that we can reach out to help us process. Because, you know, depending on your therapy, that's going to determine how you influence your cognitive, your perception, your behavior. And all of that's going to determine how a person handles stress and personal relationships. And ultimately, you having that feeling of well-being. And I think the overall comment that I want to make here is try your best to do the best that you can in each moment, not what's happening tomorrow, 10 minutes from now, 2 minutes ago. Because remember, just like when you get a blood test, it's a snapshot of what's happening for you in that moment. We have many snapshots that we have control of by saying, I'm going to only embrace 1 minute or one diagnosis at a time. That's it for me for this part of the.
Thank you, Nancy.
Hi, my name is Nancy Unger, and I'm a type 2 diabetic, and I like to say that if one is first diagnosed or if one has lost control of the blood sugar statistics, one can go to a diabetic educator, whom I think should be eclectic, which means that could be a dietitian or nutritionist. That person can talk about treatment options, resources, and exercise, you know, different things, and then the physician can take it from there. A physician can be some of the things that Vivian has mentioned. And when I was diagnosed with prediabetes, my doctor said, "Oh, your sugar is fairly normal. We think you have prediabetes." And I was never given the attention. I did not really take it real seriously until I was diagnosed by an endocrinologist with diabetes, and I finally had to go on medication. Now, part of the, my brother became diabetic. My mom had dementia and she became diabetic, so it runs in my family. I'm trying to lose weight, and that doesn't help when you have to lose weight. But I would say that treatment options, you know, monitoring your blood sugar with either meters where you draw blood, or continuous glucose monitors, reducing high blood pressure, seeing your cardiologist or nephrologist, or managing your nutrition, your medications, your exercise. Go get your lab work done, get your A1Cs fairly regularly. And as Vivian said, be your own advocate. If your physician does not call you about your A1C, one should remind the doctor's offices, because a lot of times they're so busy that they don't really keep track of stuff like that until it's, you know, until you have to call them. And I don't know, I would say I don't want to repeat what other people have said. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, basically try to be compliant and work on getting your A1C as low as possible. I would say in the mid 500s, like 5.7 to 6.2. If you go over 6.2, I mean, my physician wants me my A1C to be under 6. It's hard. I've done it several times. I say 6.2 to 6.3, even 6.4 is okay. But I wouldn't try to, you know, get any higher. I'm not a doctor or physician or, I mean, a nurse practitioner or anyone like that. But I would say that, you know, basically try to, I went through stages of grief when I became diabetic, you know, except I finally, the last one is acceptance. There are 5 stages written by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. I wish I'd written them down, but I was angry. I was in denial, you know, and I reached out to you know, it's a very, I was in a couple support groups and it made me feel a little better. And, you know, that's what you have to do. Just try not to do it alone, go it alone. Try to get your family and friends involved if you can, because there are some people who will sabotage your efforts, or they will put you down for being, blame you for being diabetic. And, you know, the blame game helps no one. So I would say, I hope I talked about everything I needed. I mean, I might have missed some things, but I just want to see if there are any questions. Christy will address that issue, those issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nancy. So what is it like living with diabetes? Well, for me, living with pre-diabetes, I was diagnosed several years ago, and my doctor told me that I was living a sedentary lifestyle. Had I known more about what I know now, I would have called my doctor on his crap. Because if anyone knows Ed and me, we walk everywhere. Before Fitbit, I had no idea how many steps I walked. I was a guide dog user. And as I said, I walked everywhere. My lipids started increasing. My cholesterol started increasing. I went on a statin, and I decided that that wasn't for me. So I told my doctor that I wanted to work on my nutrition and exercise. And of course, they put down that I was going AMA against medical advice, and kept trying to encourage me to take the statins. Well, I did not have high blood pressure, so that was a good thing. You know, we can have these things due to lifestyle or genetically. So my family has high cholesterol and hyperlipidemia. My mood swings have been sometimes off the wall, and not understanding what high blood sugar feels like or what a low blood sugar feels like, not being told that this is what's going on. And instead of looking at recipes for 3 hours and not knowing what to make because my mind is in such a fog, if I would have just had, you know, a small piece of cheese and, I don't know, some kind of tomatoes or almonds and raisins, or, you know, peanuts and apple or something, that would have helped my mood tremendously and raised my blood sugars, and I would have been able to concentrate better. So I'll get more into that later, but my grandmother lost a limb and died just after having another surgery, where she lost another limb. Both sides of my family have diabetes. My aunt on my dad's side probably had type 1. She was very thin, very, very irritable, moody. You could tell that there was just definitely something going on, and I think she was a pretty brittle diabetic and actually probably died from that. My brother was diagnosed. Both of my brothers have been diagnosed with, quote, borderline diabetes. And I don't know about my sister, but she's extremely thin and her eating habits are poor. So would not surprise me. So in order to talk about type 1, I will give this to Lorene.
Thank you, Christy. This is Lorene, and I'm going to talk a little bit about experience I had through my niece, who was a type 1 diabetic. She was 16 years old, and she's a champion soccer player. She was playing soccer internationally in Sweden at the time, She's now 22, but at the time she was drinking about a gallon of water per day, and it wasn't quenching her thirst. And 3 days of that, and she went into having a high fever and also being lethargic. And my family took her to the hospital, and they tested her, and right away found her blood sugar was at 450. And so that's a pretty high level, I believe. Anything over like 200, it's in the danger area. So they were able to treat her within 10 days, bring it to normal levels. And soon after, she was given an insulin pump. And also that was hooked up to her smart cell phone. I believe she has an Apple. And it will give her readings, so when it gets too, you know, too high or too low, monitors her, lets her know with alerts. And then also she can adjust the insulin with the pump. And I believe the pump lasts about 5 years. And easy to maintain, and it's like self-monitoring, basically. If you have any problems, though, they are able to, you know, change it. But she's had no problems with it, and she's been able to control her type 1 diabetes since then. Thank you. Next person.
Thank you, Laureen. And for type 2, we have Livy.
Thank you, Christy. I've been a type 2 diabetic since 97, actually 96, because I had gestational diabetes. I was borderline before that in 94, and then I was gestational in 96. I had an A1C of 8, and they immediately put me on insulin. At the time, we had to use syringes, and my first shot, my hubby gave me my first shot, but I got what was called a countadose. And a countadose is a little device that you put your insulin vial. There's two different types of insulin. There's usually Humalog and I can't think of the other one. Anyway, I would put the insulin vial on the little device, put my needle in, and I would click how many units I would have to have. For instance, before breakfast, it was like 35, and I think 30 at lunchtime, and then 35 in the evening. So after having that little device, which was extremely helpful, I was able to give myself my own insulin shots during my pregnancy. And then after I had my son, then they put me on metformin and Actos. I was on oral medication for a long, long time. And last year they put me on insulin because for overnight, and it was Shigeo. And I'm supposed to be on Tresiva, but right now I cannot afford it. So until my Part B is reinstated for Medicare, I have to wait till July. One of the things that I do as a type 2 diabetic is, Laurie mentioned this, you can take snacks with you, raisins, nuts like peanuts or cashews or almonds are good snacks to have. Or if you can have cheese, like a cheese stick or something like that, those are good means of protein, because you have to, you'll get shaky and your stomach will be growly. So I immediately know that, it's time for me to have a little snack. So if I'm not going to be able to be home to have dinner or lunch, then I know that I better eat a snack before that. About 3 years after I had my son, I started developing panic attacks, and where I literally thought I was going to die. My heart would race. I would get this very strange feeling from the top of my head down to my toes, and I could not function. It was so bad that I literally had to leave before the second service on Easter Sunday that one year, and go home and just kind of regroup, because it scared me to death. And I really thought I was dying, and I didn't know what was going on. So they put me on Zoloft, and I've been on that ever since. And you don't want to be around me when I'm not on my Zoloft, because I get very cranky. And yes, I get very cranky, and it's hard to, you just don't want to be around me. And I get very tired and very moody. And those are some of the things that I deal with as a type 2 diabetic.
Thank you, Livy. And to talk about resources, we have Nikki.
Don't forget exercise, Christy.
No, that's after.
Okay.
Yeah. Nikki?
I'm sorry, I was on mute. I love talking to myself. Actually, I don't. I hear enough of myself all the time. We have several resources for diabetes. The first one is ADA, the American Diabetes Association. And the web address is askada@diabetes.org. They deal with clinical diabetes, diabetes care, juvenile diabetes, and tools and support, among other things. Then there's the Abbott group, and that's Abbott, ABBOTT.com. And they have diabetes care, diagnostics, testing, healthy heart, nutrition, health and wellness, pain and movement, products and innovation, strategy and strength, sustainability. And I believe that they're the ones who made this who produced the Freestyle Libre, from what I understand. Then there's also the Joslin Diabetes Center, and that's J-O-S as in Sam, LIN.org. Then there's another one, diabetesatwork.org. And then one more, it's called the Diabetic Outlet, diabetic outlet.com. And it's a wholesaler for supplies. The prices are reasonable. And they have a subscribe and save program available. So that's it for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And to talk about fitness, we have Vivian.
Okay. So in terms of being blind or have low vision, the idea of exercise away from home can be intimidating. And so even if you choose to go to a facility, one option is to choose the exercises that are like, say, for cardio on the treadmill, as opposed to being in a cardio class, the riding bikes, ellipses, etc. The other thing you can choose is walking, water exercise. But you say, okay, wait a minute, I don't swim. I don't think I'll get in there. The wall is your best friend when you're in the pool. You can trail along it while you're walking backwards, forwards, sideways. You can turn around in a circle. So one hand is pretty much on the wall just for a split second, and then you find the wall with the other hand. Also, of course, you know, there's blind sports. And in your home, you can get some exercise equipment, like a stationary bike. But also, you know your house really well. You can start out walking slow, walking in and out and around all the furniture, put some good music on. The next thing you know, you're dancing in and around the furniture, and you're forgetting all about that you don't really like to exercise in the first place. And of course, you have weightlifting, resistance bands, and there are lots and lots of classes, even from the community, the one that goes out from ACB. You've got AARP. There's lots of exercise options that we can listen to as well. And the most important thing I want to say is that when you, say, have a meal, you follow it up with some exercise. It's our body's natural way to get an insulin shot. And if any of you are interested, I had offered earlier with the committee that I'd be willing to teach fall reduction, like fall risk reduction exercises. I think that'd be maybe something that everybody could benefit from, and that takes care of more than one thing at a time. But physical fitness also, besides the cardio, besides the muscle strengthening and endurance, we have flexibility. And the older we get, the stiffer we feel. So there's many ways to do flexibility exercises. But let's say, okay, you know, that's all good. I use a walker. I'm in a wheelchair. What do I do? Many, many, many exercises you can do sitting in your walker, the kind that has a seat, or sitting in a chair. You can still do your marches. You can do a lot with your arms. When I'm on my stationary bike at home, I get a lot of arm movement. So 10% of what you do with your arms, you're burning 10% more calories just by introducing a lot of arm movements, and you're not having to get up and figure out what's where and where you are in body and space. But the last thing I want to say is that body awareness is really important for us being visually impaired and having low vision, because that's what holds us back, I think. And there are ways in order to get beyond that. And body awareness is your unconscious relationship to your moving body in space. And once you learn what all of that entails, then that will take some of the maybe reservation away. So I say, take it away, everybody. March in place, do what you can do, and feel good about it. That's it for me.
Thank you, Vivian. And I'd like to talk about nutrition. And Vivian is dead on. When we eat, our propensity is to, okay, I'm done with my food. I'm going to go sit on the couch or lay on the couch or lie on the bed. If you are up and moving 15 minutes after each main meal, or if you're eating six times a day, like I'm suggesting, you'll be marching, you'll be doing an hour of exercise a day, and you won't even realize it. So while some people, I'm going to preface this by saying, anything you do, talk to your doctor first. But some people practice intermittent fasting. I'm a proponent of the beneficiality of eating six times a day, every 2 to 3 hours. In my case, I start at 5 in the morning and I finish by 6 o'clock in the evening. So I'm basically fasting from 6 p.m. to 5 a.m. Everybody's different and has different needs, so check with your doctor. But by eating six small meals every 2 to 3 hours, we're evening out our blood sugars. And I can tell you that I know when it's 3 hours, my blood sugar changes and I can feel it. So pairing a healthy protein with a low glycemic carb option and healthy fat as appropriate is a mainstay of keeping ourselves in good, healthy nutrition. It is possible to lose weight by simply cutting down on high fats, sodas, cutting out sodas, even diet sodas or zero calorie sodas contribute to things like depression and Alzheimer's. And our brains still get the effects of the, you know, what we're introducing, the high fructose corn syrup. Also, being careful about the amount of caffeine that you ingest, getting healthy sleep. Nothing can happen to our bodies unless we have healthy sleep. So having a morning routine and a designated bedtime and routine prior to bed, I call it my twilight hour. Staying away from starchy, high glycemic carbohydrates. Some examples of low carbohydrate carbs, low glycemic carbs are radishes, celery, peppers, lettuces, tomatoes, zucchini, spaghetti squash, and you can buy dehydrated spaghetti squash noodles on Amazon.com. And you don't even have to cook them. You just hydrate them in water and dump the water. And it's wonderful. I don't buy pasta anymore. Also, hearts of palm. Drinking soy or unsweetened nut milks, such as almond or cashew, is healthy. And while losing weight, cutting back on starches such as potatoes, breads, pastas, carrots is amazingly high. One thing I didn't realize is pineapple is through the roof. Be cognizant of the glycemic levels of your foods. Sweet potatoes are high. So if you can stay away from eating this stuff, it's very healthy. Prepackaged foods such as oatmeal, you know, those instant oatmeals, those are so not good for you. And it's just so easy to get plain non-fat Greek yogurt and throw in a half a cup of uncooked rolled oats or steel cut oats and add some chia seed, flax seed, cinnamon. And if you are able to, some berries, throw that in the refrigerator overnight and you're not even cooking a breakfast. You have a wonderful, healthy breakfast. So there are some good sources for diabetic-friendly recipes, including cookbooks through the American Diabetes Association, but also our wonderful Sugar Lopez often gives us some great recipes to follow. So I'd like to ask regarding the accessible glucose monitoring options, Nancy, followed by Livy, followed by Nikki.
Well, okay. The one I use is the Prodigy Voice No Coding. Well, I use it. Well, you can use it more often now. I'm a good example for everyone. you know, you have to use strips and you have to draw blood. But I have the soft fix needles, and I don't use insulin or the continuous glucose monitoring systems. I just use the old-fashioned talking glucose monitor that draws blood, that we have to draw blood. Thank you.
Okay, Livy. Livy or Nikki? Somebody please unmute.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I did. Okay. I'm very sorry. Okay. The Next Generation in Diabetes Care, and this is produced by the Abbott Company. under products and innovation. The Freestyle Libre Continuous Glucose Monitoring System is the world's leading system, helping 3.5 million people with diabetes live with greater confidence and freedom. With Freestyle Libre 3 comes the world's smallest and thinnest sensor, about the size of two US pennies stacked, equipped with continuous real-time readings automatically delivered to your phone every minute. The smaller size is designed to be more environmentally sustainable for people everywhere. What if your diabetes choice wasn't between what's healthy and what hurts? Like a lot of kids, Daisy Barnes, 10, has pretty full days. School and, of course, homework, soccer, gymnastics, friends, family. What she doesn't have time for, finger sticks that only slow her down as she manages her type 1 diabetes. With her Freestyle Libre 2 continuous glucose monitoring system, it's a choice she doesn't have to make between what's healthy and what hurts. She can do what's right for her best health with a simple scan over the sensor on the back of her upper arm. Daisy's got a busy life to live, one that's full of the things that she loves. Finger sticks are required if your glucose alarms and readings do not match symptoms or when you check blood glucose symbol during the first 12 hours. Thank you.
Okay. Livy, are you ready to
go? Yes, I think, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. There are other monitors besides the Prodigy. I have used in the past the original OneTouch and the AccuCheck. However, these are quite expensive. So for us as blind and visually impaired users, I would strongly urge the Prodigy Voice if you're not using the Freestyle Libre or the Dexcom. There's a Dexcom as well. And there's also the Dexcom insulin pump if you have to go that route. I have a friend that is totally blind, and she uses the Dexcom pump and does quite well with it. I know there are some pros and cons on that, and I'm sure that there are other members or folks that have not joined our affiliate as of yet that might be more knowledgeable on that type of device. And I have mentioned this earlier, or Nikki mentioned it earlier, but I wanted to repeat it. Diabetic Outlet is out of San Luis Obispo, and they are very efficient in getting you your test strips. I can get a packet of 4 boxes for about $21, which that's not bad. And they have a special, like if you order $75 worth, they give you a discount. Excuse me. And it's a great... it's a great resource. There is a resource. I'm not sure if it's still available, but I know before the pandemic, I used to read Diabetic Forecast, the ADA, American Diabetic Association's magazine. And I loved it because it had wonderful recipes, tips on exercises, inspirational stories from folks and how they conquered their diabetes and are living with it. And it was a great, great resource. And unfortunately, Talking Books don't produce it anymore because I think the magazine went under. And that was unfortunately a downside to the pandemic.
Next. Thank you, Livy.
Thank you.
So we have come to the end of our presentation. Nellie?
Thank you for being here with us today. We really enjoyed very much researching this information and presenting it to you, and look forward to other programs that we will be bringing to you in the next year. So at this point, we'd like to open it up for a few questions, and we'd ask that you raise your hand and allow Christy to call on you. And Christy will give you the information about how to raise your hand.
So to raise your hand on the telephone is *9. To mute and unmute is *6. On the iPhone, to mute and unmute is at your very left next to the leave. And to raise your hand is to go to the more button on your right, very right, and then go to raise hand. On the Mac, it's option Y, and to mute and unmute is command shift A. And on the computer, alt Y to raise your hand and alt A to mute and unmute. So do we have any questions?
When Nikki can start the ball rolling.
Okay, go ahead, Nikki.
My daughter had her first child at the age of 25. She had her second child at the age of 41, and she developed gestational diabetes. I thought that it would disappear, but it didn't. And she's had a lot of trouble since then. She's going to be 45. And the baby didn't have to go into an incubator, but he was in the NICU for several weeks, and he had a heart condition. And we weren't sure whether he was going to survive. But now, after a year of medication and everything's fine, he's almost 4 years old and he's wonderful. But I learned something today, because under the circumstances that under which he was born, is it possible that he might develop type 2 diabetes later on in life? And also, I didn't know that the diabetes would stay if it was gestational. I kind of thought that at some point it would go away, but evidently that doesn't happen either, right?
Correct.
So those are my questions. Thank you.
Yes, the gestational diabetes, and it's very much dependent on lifestyle, whether or not the diabetes complicates further into type 2. And the child also, and this is why it's so important for us as parents to model our eating, because our children do what we do, they imitate us, and they imitate their peers. And so it's really very important to teach and live good nutrition in the home.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, if we have no further questions, I am going to draw a name. So, we have 14 participants. So Larry, can you do me a favor as the host? And I am going to draw number 9.
Well, because I'm at the top on my computer, I don't know that it's the same on yours, but if I count down 9.
Right.
Pardon?
It's, oops, if I count down moved. If I count down 9 from the top of my computer, it's Nellie.
Yeah, mine too.
Okay, good.
Nellie, you got
That's
it.
That's interesting. Okay.
Okay.
Congrats.
So congratulations, Nellie.
Thank you.
So let me write that down. So you will be getting a check since you are already a member.